three?
Number four.
Oh, three.
Number three in the report is that the subject property abuts type one fish habitat, but no environmental impact study was provided, or no confirmation that a 30-meter setback would be provided, was provided, so that we agree that is a potential concern.
Okay, and I think the applicants can speak to that.
Excuse me, Mayor, say that again.
The environmental assessment, you're having a study done, I believe?
I have talked to a company, and I actually have someone on the line that could speak to some of that.
Excellent.
I guess on two different things, the fish habitat, and if we jump down to the water portion of the request also, which is the phosphorus question.
Good.
So can we maybe look after both of those items at one time?
Excellent. Just remind me if I'm going through the numbers and I get mixed up.
Yeah, I'm a little mixed up too because I think I got the wrong file there. But that's fine. If I could ask Rebecca, I know she's listening in, if she could come on board and address both of those, please.
Excellent. Thank you.
Hi there. I'm via Zoom. Rebecca Govrom, I'm a biologist with FRI Ecological Services. So respecting the fish habitat, I took a look at the latest MNRF mapping that's available digitally through the GeoHub, and the entirety of this property does not front type 1 fish habitat, so I believe the OP mapping is maybe erroneous, so it's actually considered just type 2 general habitat. That said, regardless, the fish habitat typing is a throwback, I would say, to the 1990s, about that era. And the Fisheries Act is what actually the legislative framework that provides protection for fish and fish habitat. So the current Fisheries Act, the Federal Fisheries Act, does not differentiate types of habitat. It just specifies that you cannot damage or destroy fish habitat, period. And it has provisions, measures to protect fish and fish habitat. And there are codes of practice that landowners can follow to build a dock or a boathouse, for example. And respecting those measures, that's really all a landowner needs to do. So there's sort of two parts to this. One, I believe the mapping is actually incorrect based on the latest information from the province themselves. But if we were to just assume it's correct, this fish habitat typing is sort of an irrelevant policy in the current legislative framework.
Okay, it's good to hear. We have to keep up with the legislation as it changes. And I know those areas were marked, I think, probably initially by aerial photography, by the MNR years and years ago. And the accuracy has always been questioned, I suppose. So it's good to
hear. Yeah, if it's helpful, I could share my screen. I have the map in the background. It just shows, or even just share with council. It is actually, it's their mapping, and it shows that it's type 2, and they just say it's generally unspecialized habitat for a number of fish. There's nothing particularly specialized along this entire frontage.
You should be able to share your screen if you wish, Rebecca.
Sure, okay. Just say share, is that the...
Yeah,
okay.
It should be down.
Perfect. Are you able to see the map?
Yes.
Yes,
what's okay. Yeah, so this is Rhine Lake, and then the property in question is sort of just along here. You can see my cursor. So this highlighted area, you can see this is actually the MNRF's Perry Sound fish habitat typing, and this is the description itself. So it actually says type 2, and it's McKellar, Rhine Lake, and it just says variable non-specialized habitat. So it gives a little description here of what it is. And you are correct, I believe the data source is 1993 aerial videotape interpretation, it says.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Keep on sharing.
I think the second concern, I don't know, Allison, if you wanted to speak to what your concerns were with that, and I could maybe just address them following that.
To do with the phosphorus, or is this? We'll leave it to Allison. That's good.
Okay. So maybe to address item three, I think based if we have a comment from a biologist or some can satisfy our concerns with that there is no type one fish habitat, we'd be that would address our concerns there. In terms of the water quality, we want it to be demonstrated the water quality policies in the provincial policy statement and the Township of McKellar official plan. Section 8.194 of the Township of McKellar official plan speaks to development around Ryan Lake and states that phosphorus mitigation measures should be implemented to avoid any increases in phosphorus concentrations and subsequent depletions and dissolved oxygen values. And this is policies consistent with section 2.2 of the PPS.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Mayor, so referencing the official plan, it speaks to the classification of the lake. And again, this is lake capacity model was developed actually in the late 1970s. And so the science has really progressed since then. And what we have been hearing in council meetings just like this one is that the science around this has really been evolving. And we know now that new septic systems and new development and things like the setbacks we put on waterfronts just as a matter of course through official plans and zoning bylaws actually serve to basically eliminate phosphorus inputs into the lake. So when this model was developed, it actually assumed that water and effluent and sources of phosphorus from development were actually shooting right directly into lakes. And it was taking that precautious approach to that. So respecting phosphorus, phosphorus is natural in our environment. It's important for all biological life. And what happens if you have excess inputs of phosphorus? So it's natural, it's a good thing. We have it in our bodies, it's everywhere. But too much of it in a lake can result in increased algae growth. So increased algae growth and increased aquatic plant growth isn't necessarily bad, but what happens when it dies, settles to the bottom, and it decomposes, and that uses up oxygen. So in lakes where they're stratified, fish live in those oxygenated waters, and without mixing, what happens is the oxygen gets used up. So if there's lots of dead and dying plants and they're using up oxygen, it means less oxygen for fish. This is a particular concern for cold water fish like lake trout. This is not a lake trout lake. It is quite a shallow lake, so more of a saucer shape, and it does have a warm water fish community. So in terms of how a new development may impact phosphorus, I would expect it would not if it has appropriately constructed septic systems and future lot owners are respecting the shoreline setbacks and also the vegetation and clearing restrictions that would go along with that. So I wouldn't expect that there would be any additional inputs if folks are following the rules as they are laid out now. And if a septic system is installed, and again, the Conservation Authority takes care of that, they look for a primary and a secondary location, and they approve those, and they're ensuring that, you know, they're set back far enough, that the soils are appropriate, and or you're importing soils that are appropriate to mitigate those concerns. So from my perspective, there would not be concerns with that if someone is following the current rules as they're set out.
Okay, does that cover everything, Allison, from the environmental study?
So in terms, that's really great feedback to hear. We would need to provide that, Rebecca would need to provide that to us in the form of a report which confirms what she has just said to council.
Okay, I'll turn to Mr. Greenwood. That report is being done.
Yes, it is, and Rebecca can get that done for us and get it to council and to the planner. No problem.
Okay, thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you very much.
Felt like we were back at university. Okay, back to Allison, I guess. Next number. I lost track of the numbers. So.
You keep jumping back and forth.
Yes.
But it looks like we are on item 6, which is concerns regarding the prematurity of the consent application. In the planning board report, they refer to that the applicant is likely to proceed with future consent applications for the balance of the shoreline. And therefore, we know that this application may be premature and may be better addressed via a plan of subdivision if the proposal is to subdivide the lot into multiple different lots. There are a number of different studies that are required if you are to submit a planned subdivision application, including an archaeological assessment, a water quality study, a hydrogeological report, and site evaluation report, among others. The planned subdivision application process is just to ensure that development is appropriate, that it has regard to matters of provincial interest, that natural and cultural heritage features are protected, and that adequate servicing is provided. So that was our concern, was that this application may be premature if the applicant is looking to further subdivide the remainder of the property.
Okay, and that'd be good to have that clarified. We can't predict future actions, of course. We wouldn't want the situation, I think, where proposed development for three lots and a retained is turned down because it might be a future subdivision. I'll just turn this to, I know it was in the planning report, or not the planning report necessarily, but from the Prairie Sound Area Planning Board. And I'll turn to the applicant, I guess, and maybe put him on the spot here and see what your future plans are. I mean, we try not to make decisions based on what might happen in the future, because any number of things can happen. And are you thinking of future development, or are you just going to take this as is? I mean, there's always a possibility of future development, future councils consider a new application that's put in. And don't necessarily have to consider subdivision right at this very stage. So.
I've owned the property for 7.5 weeks. I don't know who can look down in the future. The three lots, I know why I'm doing that. As far as down the road, I don't know what I'm doing. I have a commercial piece of property that is sort of a landmark, and being a local person here in the community, I purchased this. I don't know if I'm going to bring the Ryan Lake camp back to the way it was when I was 15 years old running down the beach, and the beach was huge there. The three lots that I do have on the application and I'm looking to have some consent for, I'm taking away some, the word was downgrading. I don't know if I would use the word downgrading, but I'm going back to waterfront. So I'm bringing opportunity for another building to be placed there, family to be brought up there. The property has a huge amount of frontage, like, so I can understand the planner's thoughts there. I'm thinking down the road there's going to possibly be a change in my mindset of what I'm doing, but in my mind, glad for the community that I bought it, really, because we wouldn't even have these conversations if I was a large corporate company and wanted to put 300 or 400 trailer park sites there. I could do that. I don't want to do that, but I think I might keep the camp. I can, but I don't know.
Okay,
sir. 7.5 weeks.
Fair enough, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, we have another point. Allison? I think the...
So our last concern is that we wanted confirmation that the MDS 1 setback was met. There was a farm... subject property is located north of a farm property with a cattle and associated barn, and it looks like in the revised application, this concern has been addressed.
I'm just interested too with the minimum distance separation. You had a professional do that calculation,
yes.
I'm sure. And even as I look at the regulations, I'm not sure. It meets the regulations, does it?
Yes, greatly.
Okay.
Yes. I was surprised at that. I know we're not farming communities here, but we have a lot of farms that still left, right? Tourism is our
Yeah, no, I understand. I think most of the legislation, the planners can correct me on this, deals with prime agricultural land. And we're looking at, as you say, I guess council has to look at it though too, and that's why the planners perhaps made the comment. It's future concerns after we're long gone. People, you know, there are a few complaints that come to council from the population, people who have bought somewhere, and the lot next to them could be rezoned perhaps, and they didn't weren't prepared for that. But also, we do have a noise bylaw, and there are various bylaws that we try to enforce, and if we can avoid some of those problems, I think, or mitigate them, I think that's the idea behind it too. So, but it's certainly not prime agricultural land, I think, that the legislation deals with. And it's good to hear Allison say that that's been dealt with now, their concern. Is there anything else on the list? I don't want to keep you here all evening.
That concludes our comments.
Can I address one thing?
Yeah.
Mr. Mayor, you said, and you addressed it a little bit to everybody here, including the planners, that without that bylaw on the road or driveway area, your comment was something similar, that we wouldn't have any more development. And I don't think I could have said that any better. That's the way I interpret what they had put down to myself too. I thought that was a pretty steep requirement in our own bylaw. So that's maybe something council needs to look at going forward, right? For the whole township, right? Because this planner's interpretation is totally different than previous planners, right? So,
right.
Thank you for that. I understand where you're coming from there.
Yeah, and certainly we're in the process in the next few months or so too, looking at revising or amending our official plan and our zoning. And that's one area we'll zone in on, certainly, too, to make it clearer, I suppose, for anybody trying to interpret. And I don't know if Patrick is still online. Do you have any comments on whether that application, the reapplication, should be accepted now as three driveways? We've already heard from Mr. Greenwood that one would be more appropriate from his point of view, and it does follow our official plan. So, Patrick, I don't know whether you had any concerns with going with the original application or the new one.
Yes, through you, Mr. Mayor. I certainly can't dispute or argue with the planner's interpretation of the official plan or the zoning bylaw. In my experience, waterfront lots have been accessed by rights of way in many cases, and I was surprised to hear that interpretation myself based on what I've seen in the past. Think that it does make sense from an access point of view to have one access versus three, but if that isn't possible, and at least there is enough land and enough frontage that the second sketch and the second proposal could be done if necessary.
Okay, I just wanted to where we go from here sort of thing, and what Mr. Greenwood might want to do with this, whether he scrap the second application and go with the first, is that?
Mr. Mayor, yes, but I'd like to go with the original drawing that I put forth with the original application. For me, that makes total sense.
Okay. Any other comments from council? Now, normally what we do in these situations, I know we have a public commenting period at the end, but we've always gone through while we're dealing with the matters, whether the public has anything they can add at this point, and we'll let them have their say as well. So anybody in the audience or on Zoom?
Hi, Mr. Mayor.
Yes. Have your name again, sir?
I'll let the lady go first.
Okay.
Thanks so much, Ted. It's Rebecca Gover here. I just want to preface this that I'm not a planner, but I was listening in on the part of the conversation about the road access. And of course, from the perspective of like a biology or ecology perspective, is certainly, as Mr. Greenwood pointed out, it makes more of the common sense approach to just have a single access in terms of, you know, preserving more vegetation, etc. When I read 5.8.2.2, I read it that the word existing goes with just that first, it's like a bullet list almost. So existing private road, the existing is the qualifier that goes with private road, and then there's a number of other options, registered right of way, minor extension to a private road, or unassumed public road. So I read it as a list. I did not read it as an interpretation that existing was a qualifying word for each of those. But if it's helpful at all from an ecological perspective, a single access is more appropriate.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Davidson?
Mr. Mayor, let me just give you some context for Section 5.8.2.2. That section was a necessary modification way back when the first official plan was done. The ministry at that time did not want to see consent applications throughout the municipality at one time. And remember, you remember, the ministry was in charge of consent applications, and they were turning them down where they had registered rights of way or private roads, et cetera, et cetera. And that came, if you recall, I believe you were the reeve at the time for official plan amendment number 6.
Yes.
That was a conversion of the in commercial lands to residential lots. And the ministry objected to that lot creation on the basis of that policy 5.8.2.2. They viewed it as an extension greater than 180 meters, which I believe that these policy refers to, of a private road. And that was settled at the Ontario Municipal Board that the access would be allowed to extend beyond the 180 meters down across the township right away on Camp Road, and then meeting up with, I believe it's now called Luigi's Lane, that goes down to the service of those four lots.
Yes, Fox Farm Road, yes.
But that was a specific official plan amendment that the ministry objected to. Since that time, the ministry doesn't appear to have taken that similar stance with respect to the creation of private roads or private rights of way. We've seen them throughout the township. I believe Mr. Dennerhog had some accessing some waterfront lots that he was creating on Great Owl Lake or Gray Owl Lake. But there's, you're aware that there's been numerous other ones. But with respect to this Ryan Lake development, a single access is preferable, provided that there's a turnaround and there's some kind of a road agreement between the lot owners to maintain the road to a certain standard. But the creation of three driveways is only to circumvent an official plan, which should be interpreted in its in a broad sense. In my experience, three driveways would not be, in my view, good planning. A single access would be preferable. But just the history of that, Mr. Mayor, goes back to that official plan amendment number 6 and the ministry's involvement, where they objected to those lot creations. I don't believe they would object to this, but I've been surprised before.
I appreciate your comments, and obviously we have shared history. You've been around as long as I have and dealing with these. So,
well, you've been around longer. You're older.
Yeah, you're trying to age me now, yes. Well, I appreciate your comments, certainly. That's, yes.
If
I could maybe, Your Worship, provide a comment too on that, the private roads policy. So certainly appreciate Mr. Davidson's comment with respect to the ministry and at one point not wanting to see really private roads anywhere throughout the province. We tried to put them policies in official plans, and those were always modified to some extent. Now I think, like he said, it is much more on the municipality and council to decide how you want to approach private roads and allowing development on private roads, where some councils do take that more rigorous approach. And I think that's maybe what we were interpreting in terms of reading that policy to say development on private roads is limited, whereas some councils are open to development on private roads. So I think maybe we can take that back now, having a bit more understanding in terms of council's interpretation and some of the history behind that policy. And we can see if we have a different interpretation of it. So leave that one with us. I think we need to kind of go back and relook at that section in particular to see if we can get to a yes on that policy.
Okay, that's great. We appreciate that, yes. I guess my concern here, and I don't know, maybe Patrick can answer this, what the next step is and what kind of a time frame are we looking at here?
Through Mr. Mayor, we had a revised report that address all that we've talked about tonight, and a positive resolution from council, and I'd be looking to get this consent application on the next available planning board meeting after, of course, the Rebecca's assessment of the lands. Or it would be possible also to have that assessment a condition of the consent, but I think probably in this case the assessment should come first.
Thank you. Good. I don't want to pressure J.L. Richards here, the representatives. How soon your revised report could come back?
We need probably about a week.
Okay, I'll turn to Carly. Can we get all of this on the next?
Depending on timing.
Our next meeting is September 3rd?
Correct, and the agenda would go out the 29th. So that doesn't give J.L. Richards much time, but we can work together and see if we can get it for the September 3rd meeting.
Okay, and we can have Rebecca's report by then. Okay.
Yes, you may. Yes, we can.
Okay, any further comments on this application? As long as we know the road forward and where we're going with it. Does the applicant have to do anything else? Okay, well,
thanks.
Go ahead.
One further comment, Mr. Mayor, and I don't want to throw any wrinkles into this, but OPA 6 required the archaeological assessment, but since that time, I don't believe there's been one done throughout the township. So, and the only reason that an archaeological assessment was done on the Middle River was, I think they saw it as some kind of a passageway or canoe route or something like that, but on Ryan Lake, I would doubt very much whether there's anything of archaeological value on Ryan Lake. And I think the report done for OPA 6 was like one page, saying there's nothing of archaeological value here.
Right. No, I appreciate that. And again, we don't want a situation to do studies that aren't really necessary and run up the costs for the applicant. So, thank you very much. Okay. Well, thank the planners and whoever else is on there for these issues. Thank you for coming in and very enlightening. And we look forward to your revised comments. And I think I already have the resolution that we received the planning report. And so I'll put to question that. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Thank you very much.
Mr. Mayor, just for your information, the Minister of Municipal Affairs and Housing has just announced the new provincial policy statement will take effect in October of this year.
That's 2024 one?
Yes.
Okay, we're trying to work with 2020, but that's good to hear. The timing is just appropriate for what we're trying to do, yes.
Yep.
Thank you, appreciate that. Resolution 24-475, moved by Councillor Ryan, second by Councillor Kekkonen. Be it resolved, or Councillor Haskin, sorry. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the municipal consent form for the purchase of Crown land adjacent to 129 Brownlee Road, as applied for by Robert Yardley, and further direct staff to complete the form, the Township having no objection to the application. Discussion? Comments from council on that one? This is similar to what was just done recently, I think. And rather than approve, I think that's what the M&R was after. We just have no objection to and let them deal with it. Okay, call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 24-476, moved by Councillor Kekkonen, second by Councillor Zulak. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of Township of McKellar does hereby receive the draft minutes of the July 11th, 2024 meeting of the Lake Stewardship and Environmental Committee. Discussion of those minutes? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 24-477, moved by Councillor Haskin, second by Councillor Ryland. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the accounts payable preliminary check run report for July 2024 from Treasurer Roshan Cantia for information purposes. Any discussion of that report? Councillor Ryland?
There's still a number of these, and certainly I've had these discussions with Roshan both inside council meetings as well as one-on-ones about either the budgeted amounts or the year-to-date balances appearing to be incorrect or incomplete, possibly. I know that in our budget we had some money for software for Roshan. Would that fix any of these? Do you know?
It should. Currently we're using those funds to redo our IT at the moment, and then our new IT provider will be sitting down with Roshan and going through the different tax software programs, so I don't think we'll see any changes until the new year. But I can't comment on the specific ones because I'm unsure as to the reports they provide.
Right.
If Roshan, if he was made aware of that, so I don't think it has that capability with our current system, but it is something that he'd be looking for in a new program.
There is some things, particularly in regards to, here, give me a second, I'll find the page again. On page four, I think there might be more than one page four, but first one, which is about the OPP bills, I'm confused by in the details of the item, which is the third item on the page, which starts with a 975 on it. Anybody able to find that?
No.
Say that the bill, I think, was paid on maybe, on June the 30th. It says the due date is July 31st, and underneath that it says May 2023, which at the very least is concerning. Just doing the basic math of $30,000 a month, give or take, it seems like we've paid 8 months. So if this is the June bill, it seems unlikely. It's a Roshan question, and I don't mind talking to him one-on-one about it, but it's that kind of thing that I constantly find when I'm trying to just rationalize where are we relative to the budget, and you know, how do we get to the year-to-date figure? I don't have an explanation, and I looked at it as about three or four different ways to see if I could figure out why. It's possible that we paid one more bill or that the dates that are in here are incorrect, but in any event, I don't need to belabor council with this. I'm happy to talk to Roshan and see if he can give me an explanation as to why that is.
I would think, yeah, I mean, certainly council should be aware. I think Roshan would raise any red flags if there was a concern. It's like there was with the pool. Rather than pay over a long period of time, they wanted the whole money up front.
Yeah.
$700,000, $600,000. I don't think we're suggesting the OPP is doing that. There will be a total to what their bill is for the year, and it's just a question, I guess, of whether we're paying too much early on. And,
maybe. Yeah. Or maybe we double pay the bill. I mean, that would be the other concern. I'm not saying it's happened. I'm just saying I've seen stranger things happen in bigger organizations. So.
Yeah.
And that would be the means of alerting us to it. That's all.
No, I would think Carly can pass that on too. Yeah. To Roshan.
The other thing I would like to see is rather than just by showing the budgeted and the year-to-date balance on the right-hand side of the report, that's useful, and that's how I figured out that other problem. But what I would like to actually see more importantly would be the budget for the year-to-date as opposed to the budget for the whole year. And frankly, it should be more specific. And again, what I would also like to see is what is the variance, right? Because that would be the most important thing for me looking at this from a financial point of view, is to determine if there is any major variances, positive or negative, or favorable or unfavorable, if you want me to say it that way, just so that we're alerted to it, so that we can inquire and possibly make some adjustments if they're needed. But again, if this is, and I think I'm right in saying that this is a feature of software that is really not compatible, I mean, we could wait for that, I don't know. But, and the other thing I've said before in these meetings when we go through these reports, I don't believe that we have received an up-to-date statement.
That's coming.
Pardon me?
He's doing, was it second quarter?
Yeah, the next meeting there'll be a second quarter update. He's just finished it now.
Okay, and that's, I know there's a million things going on, so I'm not pressing anybody to do it like today or tomorrow, but I think that's critical for us as a council to sit and look at these things and determine where do we have favorable and unfavorable variances, and that's the way of doing it. So.
No, and I think he can probably, maybe can't do it for these with the software, but
right.
Certainly at budget time he does the variances, so
yeah.
Maybe he could incorporate those into the...
Well, and if we got good software, I would like to see us actually getting a monthly report that told us this, right? In connection with this, but I mean, as long as it doesn't create a whole pile of overhead for him to do it, I think that would be critical. This would be the number one way we could manage our finances to make sure that we're on track, right? And that we benefit from favorable ones and we can minimize the unfavorable ones, right?
We can revisit the resolution we had quite a few months back about the monthly reports. And which departments were supposed to provide those. And I'm not sure the treasurer was on there, but we can look at it. And we'll have to question, I guess, the monthly versus the quarterly. So.
Yeah, a quarterly would probably be more preferable, just because Roshan is extremely busy with a lot of treasury items. So,
and I wouldn't want to have to spend hours to do it. I mean, hopefully you could just push a button and produce it with good software.
Well, it's limitations of the software as well, because we have two different software systems, so it takes a lot of effort.
And we can wait for that.
Councilor Zubak?
I just was thinking I should have probably declared a conflict on this, because, and I don't know if I signed the motion, because there is a check going to...
You didn't sign it, no.
No.
You make the call.
Okay,
it's up to an individual.
I just realized it.
And if council's okay. okay, I'll just, there's some other issues in here, but they're relatively minor, and I, if it's okay, I would like to just talk to Roshan. I don't think it's more than a 5 or 10 minute conversation.
Yeah, and I would say with that, we have to be a little careful that staff is aware that it's one counselor's comments.
Yeah, but
that, as far as procedure goes, so he doesn't run right out and make changes based on one person's.
I will not provide a direction to him. I will simply ask
you,
a question.
So that it comes back to council, and he can certainly raise the issue too if we all agree with what you're saying. So. Okay, I think I've read it. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried.
Go into a dance, you come in, you go out, come in, you go out.
No partner.
I have resolution 24-478, moved by Councillor Keckman, second by Councillor Zubak. Whereas the state of healthcare in Ontario is in crisis, with 2.3 million Ontarians lacking access to a family doctor, emergency room closures across the province, patients being de-rostered, and 40% of family doctors considering retirement over the next 5 years. And whereas it's becoming increasingly challenging to attract and retain an adequate healthcare workforce throughout the health sector across Ontario, and whereas the Northern Ontario School of Medicine University says communities in Northern Ontario are short more than 350 physicians, including more than 200 family doctors, and half of the physicians working in Northern Ontario are expected to retire in the next 5 years. And whereas Ontario municipal governments play an integral role in the healthcare system through responsibilities in public health, long-term care, and paramedicine, and whereas the percentage of family physicians practicing comprehensive family medicine has declined from 77% in 2008 to 65% in 2022, and whereas per capita healthcare spending in Ontario is the lowest of all provinces in Canada, and whereas a robust workforce developed through a provincial sector-wide health human resources strategy would significantly improve access to health services across the province, now, therefore, be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of Township of McKellar urged the Province of Ontario to recognize the physician shortage in the District of Parry Sound and Ontario to fund health care appropriately and ensure every Ontarian has access to physician care. Discussion? A lot to digest there. And this resolution came from?
Yeah, the Association of Municipalities of Ontario and the Ontario Medical Association.
Councilor Ryan?
I'm just curious. I mean, I did no issue whatsoever with the resolution, but I mean, should we be sending a copy of this resolution to anybody, i.e. the Minister of Health and or the Premier and or others? I mean, I know they don't ask for it. I reread their cover letter on this, but it just seems to be kind of a platitude for us to pass a resolution. I mean, what difference does it make?
They may take all the municipality support resolutions and compile it into a package and submit to the ministers. I'm not sure of that, but
okay. That
could be their thinking.
But we haven't even said that we would provide a copy of this to AMO.
Well, that's the question, I guess, when they sent this to us. Did they suggest that we forward it? If they didn't, then
no. We
probably shouldn't be doing it.
They said we could set up a meeting with the Ontario Medical Association, but
something they would organize.
Yes, of course, but I mean, I'm not suggesting we would, but I mean, I'm happy to send it to somebody that would get, that would drive some positive change, I guess, is the way I'm looking at it, that's all. And maybe, if nothing else, we can return it or provide a copy to AMO, right? But
I think that would be appropriate, and then
yeah. See
what they do with it, yeah.
Sure.
It's just surprising because usually they do suggest who we forward it to, and they didn't. So.
Well, I read the whole letter two or three times and once more while I was here because I couldn't find anything that suggested that. It just seems otherwise to be, this is something that's going in a pile of paper in McKellar, and so what?
You don't think everybody listens to the council meeting?
No.
Okay. Any further discussion? I guess we'll change the date up there too. Just notice that.
Oh, yeah.
Call the question then. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. I have resolution 24-479, moved by Councillor Keckman, second by Councillor Zulak, whereas bylaw number 2024-64 was given first and second reading at the August 6th, 2024 regular meeting of council, Now therefore be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of Township of McKellar does hereby give bylaw number 2024-64, being a bylaw to designate and assume roads in the Craigmore subdivision as highways, a third reading and pass an open council this 20th day of August 2024. Discussion? It was just that one change that we'd mentioned that it was based on the recommendations and the requirements from the previous council. And there was a guarantee made then. The 2 years has passed. We've had an engineer review it. If there's any further work that needs to be done on it, it'll be the responsibility of the township as a whole. And so long as that's clear, these roads would be assumed if this passes. So any discussion on that? Call the question then. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 24-480, moved by Councillor Ryan, second by Councillor Haskin. Whereas bylaw 2024-64, being a bylaw to designate and assume roads in the Craigmore subdivision as highways, is given a third reading and passed at this August the 20th, 2024 regular meeting. Now therefore be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby amend Resolution 24-458, referencing winter maintenance for the 2024-2025 season, to delete and schedule A the following roads: Braemar Boulevard, Straightmore Drive, and Lakeview Crescent. Discussion? Not to be upset with those that deleted from Schedule A, because now they don't belong in Schedule A. They're done automatically by the township. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Yeah, Resolution 24-481, moved by Councillor Kekkonen, second by Councillor Zulak. Be it resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby authorize a staff member of the Public Works Department, who to be determined at a later date, to attend the Good Roads Low Volume Road Maintenance Workshop to be held in Barrie, Ontario on October the 9th, 2024, and further that all applicable expenses are to be paid by the township. Discussion? Councillor Zulak.
So what was the cost of it?
I think it was $300 or something, but
yeah,
we'll get confirmation here, maybe.
I believe $375.
I think it's good in the sense of many of our roads are like this, and suggested quite a while back, and we should take advantage of it. And it's a possibility. Some of our staff have been here long enough that they can teach the course, but if they can get any new tips on how to maintain these low-volume roads, I think that would be great. And it's a minimum cost. They don't have to go to a school for a period of days to get this. And it's a one-day session, I think, in Barrie. So.
Yeah, I can confirm the early bird rate is $375.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay. All the question? All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 24-482, moved by Councillor Haskin, second by Councillor Ryland. Be it resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby authorized the Treasurer to move $1,000 from the Building Department budget line item for conferences to Building Department office supplies / materials to purchase a new desk and cabinetry for the Building Department office. Discussion? Councillor Keck?
Is there an estimate on what this is going to cost?
About $1,500.
So currently there's $1,500 in the office and equipment 2024 budget?
Underneath administration?
Yep. So for courses and training for 2024 is $3,000, conferences $1,000, membership and subscriptions $1,000, office equipment $1,500.
Okay. The building department has their own budget, so that's what the interpretation was, that if a desk were to be purchased for the CBO, it would be under the building department's budget and not administration.
We were supplied with the budget page, right, that was appropriate to this. It was in our package. It was just hard to see the highlight, but.
And I can confirm the CBO is not attending any conferences this year, so that $2,000 within the budget will not be used.
so he's looking to purchase a desk and some cabinetry for his office. So that's why it would be coming out of the conferences line item.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like this, my first one in the
right.
Yeah.
So it's this additional to what he has in there?
It would be replacing. His desk currently is old, long, and it's no longer suitable for him for what he does. So he's just looking for a different desk.
Any further discussion?
The old desk would be surplus then, declared surplus?
We may be able to use it elsewhere, but yes, if it's declared surplus or moved to a different department, then we come back to council.
Okay, call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried.
I don't have a resolution written. I'm just going to write one.
Okay.
I'm just depending on the conversation.
Okay, so unfinished business. Anything on that list should be removed. Anything added to? Under new business, we have Lake Stewardship Environmental Committee Education Volunteers at the transfer station. I don't know if somebody wants to, from the committee, wants to speak to this, what's being suggested. I think we've heard a bit of it before, but since then there's been a visit, I guess, a site visit to Bracebridge, so maybe this is more important right now. Councillor Ryan?
Yeah, we there was eight of us that went to visit the waste management facility in Bracebridge. And had a tour. We were there for approximately 2 hours, something like that anyhow. We came back from that and we had a second meeting with six of us, I believe, that were also there, also on the visit. And basically we had a conversation, included Tom. Tom came to the meeting as well. And we talked through all kinds of issues that basically were follow-ups to things that we saw during our visit. And we will provide a trip report. I apologize, I was intending to have something ready today, but Jennifer and some other members have been providing feedback. Short of me doing it while I was driving, it wasn't going to happen, but I will do it before the next meeting. In simple terms, yes, we'd like to have some volunteers from the recycling subcommittee, technically, go to the transfer station to assist local ratepayers and users as to what to do. In simple terms, without belaboring the point, the number one thing that comes to mind is how a great deal of our recycling is contaminated by plastic film, which is plastic bags as well as other things, that just gets recycled. I have lots of pictures I can show you, and it's very graphic when you see the pictures of how much there is, so that's kind of what we're trying to deal with first and foremost. There was another big, we've got a top five. I won't tell you what they are at the moment, but I mean, that was agreed by the committee. But the purpose to go to the transfer station is trying to get people to understand why and what we can do. We also agreed that to take the plastic that people lots of times bring their cans in particular in plastic bags, clear plastic bags, and take them and put them in bag and all into the recycling bin, and that causes us a problem that contaminates the load. If the load is declared contaminated by Waste Connections, then my understanding, although I don't recall that I heard this exactly, was that they'll take that whole load, the whole container, and send it to landfill, which is obviously not very good for the environment and certainly doesn't help the township with costs because we pay for landfill and we actually get paid for, well, good recycling anyhow. So, and that's really what it's about. And the second thing was we decided if we put a garbage can, and Tom had some ideas in mind as to what, we just put a sign on it saying plastic. Right beside the recycling bin, so that people, when they have that plastic bag with their cans in it, they dump the cans in, they take the plastic, shove it in a garbage can that we would then take and put in the household garbage. So that was at least agreed by the committee. I mean, before we have members go to the transfer station, I'm sure there's some concerns and or liabilities for doing that, then we could have a discussion about those things in detail. So.
I think after the tour of the facility that probably the Lake Stewardship Environmental Committee should reassess, you know, that education process is quite eye-opening that the commingled stream of containers and cans and glass gets compacted here at the McKellar transfer station, then gets brought to Waste Connections in Bracebridge, gets dumped onto the floor, gets shoved up in a pile, and gets sent down loose to another sorting facility in southern Ontario. And they do an audit. Audit sounds like a very intense scrutiny of anything, but it seemed to me that they just take a blue bin and scoop it into the pile, and that's their audit. They count how many of something is in one of these blue bins, and they don't do this every day or every load. This is just an occasional audit that takes place. So I don't know how intense of involvement the Lake Stewardship Committee members want to engage in with assisting the sorting of materials when where it's going. It doesn't seem like they're in. And one comment he made that I think really negates all of this is that he's not concerned about the McKellar meeting the percentage requirement of the RLG. So I think it should be reassessed and reexamined by the Lake Stewardship Committee, and I think review the entire recycling. There's enough material out there of investigations done on recycling that the whole thing should be investigated and reconsidered at a higher level.
We certainly, the public should be aware. They think they're doing a good thing, I guess, by recycling and separating, et cetera, but if the end result is that the recycling really doesn't mean an awful lot, then why should they be under this false belief that it does? And why are we expending, as you say, the time, the labor, the cost, and if it's really going? It's interesting that I would think that most of our loads, if not all, are probably contaminated then. If they're just dumped in a pile along with everybody else's, how do they even know? I wasn't at the visit, but from what I've heard since, they don't do the sorting at Bracebridge now like they used to. It's done down south somewhere. So they're just sort of intermediary. And we try the best, yes, and people actually believe that they're doing a good thing, but what's the end result? Is it really helping? I think that's what we have to, maybe that's what you're talking about, the reassessment.
Yes, it's very concerning, the documentaries that have been done on the recycling program and how, people think that all the plastics, they're doing a good job sorting it, and in the end, not even 10% of all plastics ever have ever been recycled, so it's getting dumped somewhere or dealt with inappropriately. So, until it's, you want to support programs that are effective and efficient and are working, but you want to certainly scrutinize and criticize programs that are being portrayed as being effective and efficient and effective when they're not. So,
not to put a damper on what you had planned, but go ahead, Councillor Ryan.
The only thing I would say from the meeting that we had last Friday with the six of us was that there is definitely an intention to do something positive to make better what we can make better. We don't control the macro picture of what RLG and others are doing. But if we can make our portion of it or even a small portion of it valid, then that's worthwhile. And I don't want to leave you with the impression that recycling in itself is not valuable. We also saw many bales that I think are, 2.5 by 4 feet, something like that, of tin cans, aluminum cans to be more precise, that they bale up and everything else, and they told us that they sold those for $2,500 a ton, and we have a lot of those. Unfortunately, again, the commingled aspect is a major problem, but if we can get the plastic film out of ours, then that would help. There is a number of other suggestions, and I did get some correspondence from Jennifer this afternoon. She knew I was anxious for it, but I would have just been in a mad rush to do it, so I decided it'd be better just to do this. So at the moment, without council's approval, we won't go and do the, if you want me to call it education, I'd like to find a nicer word, because it sounds like a teacher talking to a student, and I hope we can be more friendly than that when we're talking to users. But in any event, I think there is good intentions to do this, and I think there's enough expertise of people that were there and would come here if we want them to talk about exactly what to do. And it isn't to try and make the world perfect. I'm not that kind of person. I mean, I think we can make a big improvement, especially on plastics. And liquids was the other thing. I know, Mike, you heard that too. So, and we can do some simple things. Ross, whose last name escapes me at the moment?
Crockford,
yes, you're right. Is also writing up some other some drafts of some other documents that we hope to post on Facebook and things for that too, and to keep the message simple and short. So I haven't yet seen that, but it's possible that he's done that in the meantime too. In any event, I just want to kind of brief you that that's what we did. I think it was worthwhile. It certainly opens my eyes to a lot of things, and there are some, when you see, in particular, I took videos of some, well, they were men, sorting things coming along a high-speed conveyor belt and pushing all the plastics that I think can be recycled into bins and everything else. It's quite remarkable to watch, and if we can figure out the technology for it, I mean, I'd love to show you those videos. I've got three or four of them. I think, I don't recall, somebody else does as well. So, I mean, it's quite illuminating to watch, anyhow, when you realize that's not done. The cans are done automatically by machine. The plastics and other garbage, not so much, but anyhow. Sorry, yeah, I've been talking too long.
It's so. Something, too, that we used to sort right on site. I see it separate bins, and then suddenly they wanted them all thrown in together. They would look after it, they said. But
yeah. It just, the whole system doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. You know, a lot of energy being exerted into something that doesn't make common sense. Like, you know, it was pushed about 15 years ago, co-mingling so that you get a better participation rate. Everyone can sort of just dump everything in one bin. But then it contaminates a lot of the products. Like, the glass becomes contaminated, whereas there is a demand for 99.5% clear or uncontaminated glass. But the majority of glasses, they have to pay for to dispose of because it's too high of a contamination rate with the glass. So certain things there's definitely a market for. Like, you know, metal is always a market for, and it's a decent price. But we did also see you know, a significant part of that warehouse full of bales of plastic that's just garbage.
Although my notes, and I wrote this down specifically, at the briefing afterwards, Mike, he told us that they can sell plastic for $300 a ton. And I'm very specific about when I wrote that, and he did say that. So that
was a specific kind of plastic.
Okay.
But as soon as you walk down the stairs,
yeah,
that entire area that was full of bales of plastic,
yeah,
that was just garbage.
Okay.
Well, before you go any further,
yeah,
as you say, certainly the liability is a concern of people standing in there. And, they're not covered by the township liability. They'd be volunteers, so there'd have to be something to sign. I think there's a waiver, and I don't know how the effect of our waivers are right now, but we're working on the rewording of some of those quite a few months back. So we want to make sure that they are covered, because if you get irate ratepayers, residents, that don't want to go through the sorting, and as you say, it's voluntary, but they might not see it that way.
I know.
A lot of them just want to go in and get rid of the garbage and leave. So, but that's good. You're looking into it, I think. And just,
well, it was a very engaged group, anyhow, that came. And even afterwards, when we were talking about it on the Friday, again, they're very engaged in this and trying to make a difference, right? However small that might be, it's better us to do something than to do nothing. So,
but I think the one statement by the manager there that he felt that what was coming from McKellar was would meet the criteria, that he had no concerns as is where we are. So I think that, you know, that's, I think, a reassuring statement that what's going there is,
sure,
acceptable.
If you're okay, Mike, I'll whenever I have a consolidated document, whatever, a trip report, I'll give it to you for your feedback too, because there was some things you mentioned that I'd forgotten about. So I couldn't write fast enough, anyhow. But
no, the solution would be that Councillor Kekkonen can do the report. The things that he mentioned.
Or he can do his own report, either way. So.
Or I can do a presentation of other documentaries that already exist.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
That'd be good. Okay, public notices, announcements, inquiries, reports by council members. Any committees you've attended, workshops?
I gave my report.
Okay. Consent agenda. Resolution 24-483, moved by Councilor Hassan, seconded by Councilor Ryland. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation, Councilor McKellar, hereby received the consent agenda for correspondence. Any wish to pull from that list? Short list again. Okay, call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried.
I do have a question.
Now you have a question. Okay.
Okay. Inquiries on 224. I just curious about the washrooms at the rink.
I'll have to get an update from Tom.
So did they get the tank, the hot water tank? At our last council meeting, Tom had said that they were getting hot water tank on the Wednesday. And I assumed, which I shouldn't have, that then the washrooms would be open. And then I have been asked by people in repairs when they're going to be open.
I'm unsure, to be honest, but I will.
Did they get the tank?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, and when they're going to open them up, okay? And if they aren't, is there a possibility, because the post office doesn't open until 9:30?
We could unlock the door downstairs.
Then
yes.
They could use that washroom?
Yep.
Okay. Then another question I had was the signage that's put up there, where it says no parking. So there's only one spot for the post office to park, so why can't they park along there?
Yeah, it was a confusion. I think that the idea was the pickleballers were all parking along there as well, and the people from accessing the post office couldn't park anywhere. So, however it transpired, the signs went up, no parking.
Yeah.
And so you're right. I mean, pickleballers aren't parking there anymore, but neither are the people visiting the post office. So somehow it has to differentiate the two users, I guess. If you're going to use the post office, that's the place to park.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if we have a sign that says that. So.
We'll have to get a post office parking sign.
Right. That might work, yeah. But you're right, that's very confusing for people that drive down there and now they don't know where to park.
Yeah. And then just that one other question I brought up to you the other day, Carly, about the keys for...
Yes, I know that is still outstanding. We'll get the mayor some keys.
Okay.
That's it, I think.
Resolution 24. I guess we'll go to question comment period related to items on the agenda from the public, either in person or on Zoom. Any issues? Has to be on the agenda, though. Okay, hearing none. Yeah, Resolution 24-484, moved by Councilor Zulak, seconded by Councilor Kekkonen. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation, Township of McKellar, does hereby give bylaw number 2024-67, being a bylaw to confirm the proceedings of Council of first and second reading. Further read a third time and passed the open Council on its 20th day of August 2024. All in question, all those in favor? None opposed? Carried. And Resolution 24-485, moved by Councilor Ryland, seconded by Councilor Hassan. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation, Township of McKellar, adjourn this meeting at 8:40 p.m. to meet again on August the 25th, 2024, for the zoning bylaw and official plan open house with planner John Jackson or at the call of the mayor. All the question, all those in favor? None opposed? Carried.